Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is the writer-director of a new horror film called Sleigh Bells. It's available now on demand. For more information, check out SpookyDan.com. Guys, Spooky Dan is on the program.
This is your first feature film. You've been in the business a pretty long time, though, right? You started off doing like practical effects, and you moved into other things.
Really? You know what? I went to college for practical effects, and I moved out to California right when practical effects was kind of ending, in that moment after Jurassic Park and the Hulk came out, and everyone was like, forget practical, everything has to be CG. So I quickly kind of moved over to that side of stuff. And now practical effects is like a fun hobby on the side, but I have a soft spot in my heart for it. I still love that stuff.
There's a little bit of a resurgence, though, right? I mean, I know there's a lot of people like myself who grew up in the 80s who, everything that I want is I want practical effects. Obviously, CG, you know, can help practical effects along a little bit. But I feel like now that there's a whole generation of filmmakers now coming up and they're like, man, we got to harken back to those days of HBO movies. You know, the practical effects that I saw, you know, every afternoon on HBO and the movies that I loved. Are you seeing that?
Yeah, you know, a couple things come to mind. There's no matter how great they can make the Hulk look in the Avengers movies, he still is an animated character. And I think that uncanny valley thing that happens in all of our brains knows it. And even though they're dynamic and amazing and super well executed, we still have this visceral thing that's no different than watching Zoe Bell, I think her name was, on the hood of the car in Grindhouse. Like, you feel it. You know they're there. You know it's real, and there's a weight to practical effects that just so far in CG can't quite be replicated. We're very close. Things like Where the Wild Things Are, I think, got it really right, where you do a practical body and then enhance parts of it.
Right. So
there are ways to make it really work well if you have that kind of budget, but to me, I'm like you guys, growing up in the 80s, and there's just something special about a guy in a suit. And as dumb as that sounds, there is something cool about it. And, you know, when we decided to make a movie with Krampus, right from the get-go, it was like, all right, I've done visual effects for years. I don't want visual effects in this movie.
Was practical effects like your passion? I mean, does that come from like an art background, or did you just want to get into movies somehow and that seemed like the thing to do?
A little bit of both. I think just being fascinated with the magic of special effects growing up, and like Fangoria was my Bible, you know, like when it showed up, you would read it cover to cover multiple times and just study how did they rip that guy's jaw off and make it look really great. You know, how do you do that with special effects in your backyard? And then that grew on to going to school. And, you know, Savini, I went to the Art Institute of Pittsburgh before Savini had his own school because Savini was on the board of directors. That was the reason I picked that school. But it was really from my love of horror. Just that's where I was like, this is where I want to spend all my time. And I kind of did for it. I still have, trying to at least.
And then when practical effects kind of took a nosedive and then you got into digital effects. Did you never really get into it? It was just something to do to survive, I guess. Is that accurate? It's kind of like the coal miners. They want to dig coal, but they tell them all to learn to code. So I guess they don't really want to code, but it's something to keep in the game.
The honest truth is this, and this is actually a little more normal today, by today's standards, but, you know, I would make these short films, and I was at a public access station, so I had a little, like, it's embarrassing now, but at the time, it was cool, but it's basically, I had a Goth Talk type TV show, where I interviewed Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson and played music videos, but because I knew the editing software at the early stages of when editing had switched from film to digital, I was able to quickly transition into visual effects. It was actually like, you knew enough about Photoshop, you knew enough about editing, it's sort of a bit of both worlds, and I was able to kind of jump into visual effects. And even to this day, because my wife is a visual effects supervisor, she works on tons of big stuff, and all of our horror friends, you know, they're constantly asking Tammy or I, one of us, to like, I need to take you to dinner so I can pick your brain about how I'm going to pull off these shots. Just because it's sort of ingrained in you, and, you know, to this day, I'll take a little job here and there and help out friends and with visual effects. It's a fun world to be in. And what's fascinating to me, and sorry for rambling, but, you know, in the 80s, you spent all of your time and money on pre-production. So So, or a movie like The Dark Crystal, you would spend a year building all that stuff and you'd have your crews paying everything. And now it's just the opposite. You spend all of your time in post-production so that you can get everything just right and just fix it there. And it's just, it's the same thing, just sort of at a different perspective. But again, I think for those of us that grew up in that era and now see like the benefits of both practical and visual effects, the digital style one, it's a really exciting moment in time that we're in.
Yeah, we have come a long way from that really disorienting blood splatter that they used, you know, that they used at the beginning of computer visual effects, where, you know, instead of actually using the practical swibs.
Yeah,
I think it's so jarring. And I think they did it in Die Hard, maybe 4. I think 4 was the first one that I mean, obviously other movies had done it, but man, it just took you completely out of the moment when you're watching this movie. It's like, well, there's like a computer generated mist just kind of shot out of this guy, and it's like it really does take you out of it. But
Travis might have just put his foot in his mouth. Did you work on Die Hard 4?
Well, I was just gonna say, I have a funny story about Die Hard 4. So I worked on Die Hard 4, and I don't remember specifically doing blood effects. I was never a particle guy. That would be a particle department, but
cut that out, Mike.
No, it's fine. It's actually kind of funny. So while I was working on Die Hard 4, you would spend, let's say, I don't know, 8 to 25 hours on a shot. And when you get it close to ready, you would hit render, and the computer would have to do its thing for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, and you'd wait and do nothing and just, you know, surf the internet. So at that moment in time, all I did was I kept hitting render before I should, so I would go and write an article for Bloody Disgusting. And about halfway through that movie, I realized, wow, my heart is not in visual effects the way it once was, because all I care about is, you know, writing for Bloody right now.
That's crazy. You guys can bond that you both got mad at digital effects because of Die Hard 4.
Yeah, and you know, it had nothing to do with the movie. It just had everything to do with like sort of following your heart, where you know you are, where you're supposed to be. That's one of the interesting things, whether you're in Hollywood or whether you work in a regular, you know, like a 9-to-5 punch the clock accounting job. If you know where you're good and you know where your heart is leading you, like, follow that. Take that as soon as you can. And that's exactly what I did. So that was sort of my entry into professionally working in horror outside of visual effects, but being like the horror guy for a really long time.
So this is your first feature, like Mike had said, but this is something you conceived years ago, right? This has been a long journey to get this, to get Sleigh Bells made and released.
Yeah, it was one of those first timer problems of, I found the money, we have the script, everything was going great, we shot the movie, at, you know, in I think 14 days, something very minimal, and I was like, we're gonna have it out by the end of the year, and then we're out of money, and then post production still needs to happen. So then it was a matter of, you know, taking jobs to get the money to get the things that needed to happen. And so what I thought was gonna be a 6-month turnaround from the last day of shooting ended up being damn near 5 years. So it was a long journey on my part, and because honestly, this is something you hear from a lot of filmmakers, and it's heartbreaking when it happens, but you see your first cut of the movie and it sucks. And you're like, I'm a failure. What do I do? And the answer is, you fix it. You go back and you fix what you need to fix and get it as right as you can. So I can honestly say, you know, there are parts of Playboy that I'd love to have different, but for the most part, I think as soon as we get to Santa's Village, the movie is fun from that point on. Up to that point, it's a little like, oh, I wish it was a little tighter, a little better, but it's a fun movie. And the best part about Sleigh Belt now that it's done and finished and people are seeing it, is with almost all the reviews, even the bad ones, they all kind of praise that, like, oh, well, he did comedy the way that he was trying to do it. There's no questioning. So, like, I tried to make a silly, culty movie, and I think I accomplished that.
Right. I guess at the end of the day, if they say that it looks like everybody had fun and you made the movie you wanted to make, then, I mean, it's not really a criticism.
I'm not a giant horror guy. Travis is much more the horror guy than I am.
I enjoyed the movie. It was great. I mean, it's a fun movie. And, I mean, Barry Bostwick's in it. He's playing Santa. He looks like he's having a blast. But, you know, I was really excited to see Bull from Night Court. I don't know the guy's name, but Bull from Night Court's in it.
Cool. Yeah.
Martin Mull's in it?
His name? Yeah, I didn't do my research on this from Night Court, Travis. I think everybody knows who I'm talking about.
It was kind of funny. I went to a horror film festival in Big Bear, California, and Richard Mull happens to live nearby there. So when we met him, he was like, yeah, come shoot a movie up here. I'll be in it for free. So of course we're like, oh yeah, we're going to shoot a movie up there. Let's call Richard Mull. And of course he wasn't for free, but he did live around the corner. So we got him in the movie for a couple of days, which was really nice. And it would have been cool if we had him a little more. He really wanted to be Santa Claus, but we had already cast Barry Boswick. But, you know, happily cast Barry.
Oh, absolutely.
But he would have been great in that part too, you know.
His accountant got a hold of him and told him to stop volunteering to be in movies for free.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, here's the reality. The sort of the sad truth of where we're at today is if you get someone of his stature or bigger show up for a couple of days, they're not making a fortune. So their manager is not getting rich off of these independent horror movies.
Right.
I wish we could make them rich. I wish we had the budget to make people rich, myself included, for that matter.
So do you have, I mean, you've had a couple of years where this one has been, where you've filmed it and it's done, but you couldn't get it quite done. Have you done anything since then? Have you got more things in the can that we can look forward to?
Well, I did a bunch of visual effects last year for a bunch of, for the Christine McConnell show on Netflix. And
oh, you worked on that? That show's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I did the opening title sequence for that.
Oh, nice.
And, I am a huge, because of my practical background, I'm a huge fan of puppetry. So when the call came in, it was like, it's a spooky Martha Stewart show and there's Jim Henson puppets. I was literally like bouncing off the walls excited. I'm like, you people, you have to come over to my house and see. You'll understand why I'm so excited about this. This is like my world. I love it. So it was kind of a match made in heaven. I hope we get to do another season. I haven't heard yet if there has been, but fingers are crossed right now for that. That show is a lot of fun, even if it is a bizarre show.
it really is. I think that's why it's my cup of tea. It's like it's not like really anything that that I've seen in recent history. Do you have anything? You've made your first feature. Are you interested in directing again? Would you? Was it a good experience? You want to tackle it again?
I have the exact stock answer you want to hear, which is I have four different projects I'm developing right now and looking for one. Whatever's next, this is a kind of an interesting thing to me, at least, is as a director, you get, let's say, a couple weeks to a couple months on set to work as a director, and then you have a lot of posts.
Right.
But in real life, if you guys are podcasters, how many shows have you done to this point? You know?
This is 388, I think.
Okay. Hundreds. You have hundreds of hours of experience of doing this. And if you go back to your first episode, you're probably cringe at how unsophisticated it is compared to now that you just know second nature. And it's a weird sort of thing being a director, or a producer's a little better because you're still a little hands-on for a longer amount of time. But as a director, I just want to work. You know, so if a Lifetime movie came across my desk, I would be more than willing to look into it. I can't get that in my head, then I can't. But for the most part, like, directing is directing. I want to get more experience.
Yeah, so just get that experience, right?
I want so much to see Dean Cain starring Lifetime movie directed by Spooky Dan.
He's in all of them, I think.
Well, all fun, even I wish. him, and if we can get Lacey Chabert and,
we got to get Danica McKellar.
Yeah, there's another couple. Oh, Danica would be nice. We can get, like, the holy trio of all the big... And again, I've got some Christmas experience. We can make it a Christmas romantic comedy where they're still around the loop somewhere. Let's develop this as we're talking, guys.
Spooky Dan's Lifetime movie that is essentially the Expendables of all of the Lifetime movies.
I've been talking with some friends. I did a podcast where literally they give you the setup for a Christmas romantic comedy and you as a writer figure out where the story is going because they're just so predictable.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the whole point of the podcast. So it was a lot of fun doing that. And, you know, we were talking about I wonder if there is a way to make these kind of fun because there's clearly a market out there. But I think 80 of them were made this year alone or the past year alone just for Hallmark, Lifetime, and Fox Family. 80 different Christmas romantic comedies were made. For 2018.
Well, I know one of those stations does like an entire month and it's not December. I think is it like August or July where they literally play and like I think it was either a couple times a week or like literally one a day brand new Christmas movies that they had put out. I swear I saw that this year.
They certainly have enough.
See, that's the thing about Christmas movies is they're really only shown at Christmas time, but they are showed every Christmas time. Like and so yeah, I mean you just kind of enter the Christmas churn, and then every Christmas people, yeah. Hey, it's time for Christmas movies. Let's get out that Kurt Russell one that he's driving the Santa taxi. That's what we watch now every Christmas. We watch the Kurt Russell Santa right. taxi that's, movie.
It's fascinating in 2019 right now. Like if we put a movie out today, let's say we put out like a monster, like a swamp monster movie. We've got about a 3-week window of where it matters to people, where they're talking about it. And then another 3 weeks to a couple months of just, you know, still pushing it and marketing it. And then your movie is done and it's a catalog title. So you have this 6 to 8 week window and that's kind of it. The nice thing about Christmas is I only have a 4-week window, but I get to repeat it every year for 4 or 5 years.
Well, and I watched Sleigh Bells in late January, Dan, and I enjoyed it just the same. It's set in Christmas time.
Yeah.
There's a Santa Claus and a Krampus in it, but I mean it was fun anyway, guys. So you see Spooky Dan's movie in February, you'll still enjoy it, I think. So it's sleighbellsmovie.com. Follow Spooky Dan on Twitter at Spooky Dan. It's on demand. It's on your Amazons and your iTunes or whatever. We'll link to it and all our stuff too. So,
thank you.
Yeah, Dan, we appreciate you doing it, and hopefully next time have something coming out, we can do it again.
All right, and keep me in mind when you guys want to do the Expendables of Christmas romance.
Absolutely,
we'll get together, spider room going.
I got an outline for this.
Start on that.
I got an outline for the script ready to go already, so you'll be hearing from me.
All right, cool. I'll call my lifetime friends, and we'll make this happen. But please add blood somewhere. We gotta mix it up just a little.
Absolutely,
it's right in the title that I'm thinking of. We'll do this off air. We don't want anybody to take it from us.
Good.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it, buddy.
Well, thanks,
thank
Dan.
So much, guys, I really appreciate it.
Take care. It's been a pleasure.
All righty. Bye.
Travis, I like Spooky Dan.
I'd like to talk to him like when he's not driving a car, you know what I mean? Like when he's sitting and we can just, cause he seems like he's worked on shit for decades and I just can't even imagine the stories. And I mean, that's even talking so, about.
That's so Die funny Hard. That you brought up Die Hard 4. And like I had just looked at his IMDb and I knew that he worked on a Die Hard. I just didn't know which one.
that was the one.